I never forget the first moment when I walked into a cinema. I was hooked from there on.
Okay, we're back in our usual haunt of the lighthouse today, and it is bound to get noisy as there's an event on here that they won't tell us about.
Or give us any free wine.
Or, yeah, the free wine would be nice.
Yes. We want the finest wines available to humanity. At the very least to us.
After the first two podcasts that we recorded, Philip insisted that we both watch with Nell and I, and Jason agreed after the first one, and yet he's still bringing it up. It is.
It's a good film. Shut up!
It's a great film.
Thank you.
Okay, so I'm going to start off today with some news, and the most pertinent one, of course, is that Russell Crowe was in Dublin over the weekend attending the premiere of Noah.
Was he?
He was, yes. And he made a few waves while here, which is very apt considering the film's subject matter. We sent along Philip to meet the man on the red carpet, and he didn't have any great stories to tell when he came back. Well, he had some nice ones, but mainly it was the other behaviour on the red carpet that got social media attention.
Plonkergate, as it's now been called.
Plonkergate, yes, you got to love that.
I do, and I'm not one for getting on any bandwagons, but Crowe was completely right. I ranted about this on my Facebook page yesterday, but...
As you saw,
thank you. And thanks for your support. Practically everybody else who was there doing the red carpet thing was there in a professional capacity, just trying to do a job, as was I, and doing it out of my own time and getting no pay for it, I might add.
You don't pay us that?
Yes, no, I don't have
Sorry.
That's not your fault, Niall. It's just the way
one day seems to work. Pay us.
So, you know, to watch somebody come in, make an embarrassment of herself and completely denigrate what the rest of us are trying to do, by me, for whatever self, is absolutely disgusting to me. And I think she should be ashamed. I believe she was on my interpreter this morning trying to defend herself. Good luck with that.
Why not just fess up and say, listen, I didn't research properly, I didn't prep it, and I made an arse of it.
Yeah.
So, and move on.
So for those of you who don't know the actual story, what happened is that an Evoke.ie journalist went along to the red carpet event and asked Russell Crowe a question about his rugby team. Unfortunately, Russell's team plays rugby league and not rugby union. She asked about the possibility of playing against our national team. So Russell informed her that they play a different sport. She persisted in the line of questioning. He said, you do realize that's a completely different sport, that there's 15 men on the rugby union league team and 13 on a rugby league team. To which she responded, well, you do know that Ireland's not part of the UK, after Russell made a mistake earlier in the day saying that he'd like being back in the UK, which he clarified almost immediately by saying, this part of the world. It was one of the most awkward things you could possibly imagine. It's on YouTube.
I really wish I hadn't seen it in some ways. It's kind of horrible.
It is horrible. I wasn't anywhere near enough to hear it, but watching it back after the fact, I was just... It's dreadful. It's embarrassing. It's why? Why would you do that? I mean, she's clearly one of these people who thinks you can go along and just get something out of them for the crack.
The page hits.
And the page
hits. Which undoubtedly forgot.
Yes, which one of the things that it did do was give a load of free advertising to Evoke.ie. So that they did achieve.
That was the point.
They did achieve something there. In their post of the click online, were the ones that that broke the story.
It was
our friend Daniel who did it, and they put up the video, and then Evoke put up their version of it, claiming, of course, that their journalist was badly treated by Russell Crowe. In fairness, he was brusque, but he was absolutely right.
He was very patient, and he walked away. Yeah. Essentially, he didn't really. He just obviously got fed up and was like, "Enough of that."
So, unfortunately, she couldn't let matters lie there and went onto Twitter to have a go. And Russell Crowe's official account, whether or not it's the man himself,
I think it is.
I believe it probably is. But he went back and called her a plonker. Hence, plonker. Yeah.
It's just, why do some journalists, and I use that term loosely, persist in doing things like this? I was told after the fact that someone else made a similar gaffe, but we didn't get any attention because it wasn't audio or video recording. But somebody who was further down the line from me, and I was near the end of the line, and I had to go straight away afterwards, but somebody else asked him a question. I believe it was, why isn't Emma Watson here?
Oh, I heard that.
Yeah. And he then replied, you had all this time, indicating the length of the course, to come up with a question, and you choose to ask me that. And then he walked off, rightly so.
Yes.
I've got one thing to say about it. This is what's going to increasingly happen as kind of particularly online media fight for hits.
Yeah.
As up here, just going to get in that inane questioning, silly, provocative kind of conversations happen to try to get a controversy out of it, to get the page hits, to get the advertising, and has nothing to do with journalism, nothing to do with film, which is essentially what this should be, because you did an interview with Russell Crowe, and it was great.
Yeah.
It was a nice read, it was fine.
Thank you.
Russell was very entertained, he seemed interested and engaged.
And he surely was
that was the whole
he wasn't
point.
At all.
That's what the point should be, to go there to do that. To go, like, have a read of this, this is good. There you go.
So Phil's interview is up on the website there.
Our fine read.
Our review of Noah is also up on the website, and the film is out on Friday.
Yeah.
In a similar sort of story, I went last Friday evening to speak to Brendan Gleeson, John Michael McDonagh, and Killian Scott about Calvary. I was part of a group of people that were interviewing the three guys. So I was in a group of four when we were interviewing John Michael and Brendan together, and then Killian Scott after. During this interview with Killian Scott, it was taken over by a journalist from one of the national newspapers, fishing for information on Love Hate.
For the love of Christ.
Why?
You shouldn't be just get out. Like,
just.
I mean, this is what I'm talking about. This is exactly where it's going.
Yeah.
It's nonsense.
And Killian, to his defense, answered very well and gave him absolutely nothing. So it was
good. Good man, Killian.
So moving on and away from the madness that is the Irish media corps. I'm moving on to
beautifully put.
To news to this week's
so actual
news.
Film stuff.
Other than than what happened at Noah. So Warner Bros. Came out and announced that the next Harry Potter spin-off, or the only current Harry Potter spin-off, J.K. Rowling pen Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, which she's currently writing, is going to be three films. So this is an 80-page book. Has been turned into three films.
Oh God, it's the Hobbit effect. Heaven help us.
The Lord of the Rings effect, really, and then the Hobbit effect.
Yeah, but the Lord of the Rings, at least that was three films for three books.
That's true. That's very true.
So, I mean, it's an interesting story. It tells about... It's all about the magical creatures that exist in the wizarding world of Harry Potter.
Okay.
And...
Yeah, but isn't that... That sounds like relatively slim material. I mean...
It's going to follow the book's author, who is the wonderfully named Newt Salamander.
Mm.
That is a great name.
Fabulous name.
It runs nicely as well.
Exactly. And he's and his quest to catalogue all of these magical beasts, some of whom are invisible. So that
they might be good.
That's all whoop-de-doo special effects material. I want a plot. I want something involved.
I'm thinking that it's going to be sort of David Livingstone, you know, type thing. It's basically going to be nature with magic creatures.
See, I don't know about it. The only issue I have is that...
We have an invisible creature. You can't see it, but I assure you, it is there.
But, like, you're going to have it.
I'm impersonating David Attenborough now.
I get angry about things where you announce a trilogy to something... for something that doesn't really exist. It's like it's cart before the horse surgery. Let the books come out, let something exist in the world. It's just exhausting. I find that exhausting and cynical.
When the book came out as a 80-page comic relief teams...
Right.
Okay, the fact that you had to use the words comic relief, that makes me worried.
Well, it came out as a charity thing.
Which is fair enough.
Like, two books came out. One of them is Quidditch Through the Ages, and the other was Fantastic Beasts.
Which is going to be a seven-film series.
Quidditch Through the Ages will be adapted for episode. But the thing about that is then you are going to have spectacular visuals there, because Quidditch, the first two films tried desperately hard to get it right, and it wasn't until The Goblet of Fire that flying really looked proper in the Harry Potter universe. And so,
I can take or leave Harry Potter, I can take or leave this.
Ditto.
Well, it's Warner Brothers' quest to find another
cash cow.
The DC thing is, they don't know what the hell they're doing there.
My suggestion. If they want to do this right, and they want somebody who's involved with the Harry Potter universe, Alfonso Cuarón. There.
Yeah, Agreed. Yeah, absolutely. So I'm going to stick on the Warner Brothers thing. I'm going to leave off news, but then I'm going to look at the Warner Brothers slate that's coming up for the rest of this year. So the first movie that we have coming up this year is Transcendence. This is cinematographer Wally Pfister's directorial debut.
It looks, well, of course it looks interesting, because it is, okay, it's Pfister. He is a marvelous cinematographer. He won the Oscar for Inception, he photographed most of Christopher Nolan's films to date, but he's untested as a director, so that remains to be seen. Great cast: Johnny Depp, Rebecca Hall, Paul Bettany, Martin Freeman.
Yeah. I will wait to see what happens, but I thought the trailer was appalling.
That is my issue.
I thought it was dreadful.
The visuals look like a grabber, but that plot worries me. The fact that Johnny Depp, after an assassination attempt, his memory or his mind gets uploaded to a computer. Yeah. Okay.
So I can't
wait to see how you're going to make me buy that. No. I really can't.
Johnny Depp is a scientist whose specialty is artificial intelligence, and then his wife and his friends decide to, after the accident, upload his consciousness. So we have seen conscious computers before, we've seen conscious robots before on screen.
Sure.
The next Avengers is going to have a conscious robot as well. So you're going to have two of them. You're going to have Ultron. You're also going to have
Jarvis. Really,
Jarvis in a suit.
They do.
Oh, you feel old.
Me too.
It's exhausting.
And now I can't get the image out of my mind of Hal from 2001 being voiced by Johnny Depp.
Yeah.
Especially some of his characters. Hunter S. Thompson, Hal.
Daisy, give me your answer to. Oh, Jesus God.
Okay. Transcendence looks like it's going to be amazing, but we'll see what happens.
I come to this with high hopes, but tempered. High but tempered hopes,
yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. No, on even higher hopes, next out from Warner Brothers is Godzilla.
Ooh. Now, there's a great trailer.
That is one hell of a trailer. They sold this well.
I really like this previous movie, which has just escaped me.
Garth Edwards.
Monsters, yes.
Very
great low budget. Really interesting. Some great ideas in it. Cover me excited. I really want to see this one.
The thing that's interesting me about it, again, more than Transcendence, it's the cast. Aaron Taylor-Johnson, Elizabeth Olsen.
Bryan Cranston.
Fine things. And then Bryan Cranston. Juliette Binoche. Yes. Sally Hawkins. That is quite a vote of confidence that he gets such great actors.
It's some wonderful voices. That maybe there's a good script in there as well, which hopefully there is.
Well, it couldn't be any worse than Roland Emmerich's Godzilla now.
No, it could not.
Godzookies. The multiple Godzookies.
Oh, God.
And the constant wetness, and of course, Matthew Broderick.
Speaking of wetness.
Yeah, that film did not have a lot going for it.
No, it did not.
But the new one looks amazing. The marketing material has been very, very impressive.
I'm generally big budget. I'm generally the first to moan about it, but this looks great.
It does.
Unashamedly, that's actually one of the films on the port of this year more than anything, to be honest.
I'll say this much for Warner Brothers. They almost always manage to sell their blockbuster as well. Think of the work that they've done for Christopher Nolan's movies.
Sure.
Green Lantern.
Okay. There's always an exception, but I think it proves the rule. That was a bad
thing.
They usually deliver great
buckles. They sold Green Lantern quite well up until the point when people actually saw it.
Well, there you go. Credit to their marketing people, but Godzilla, it does look great. Again, with any blockbuster, I'll go with tempered hopes, but hey, I think this could be a winner.
On the other end of this scale, and the movie that I'm least looking forward to out of the Warner Brothers latest that's coming up is Blended. This is the new Adam Sandler film.
Oh, Christ.
Drew Barrymore and Adam Sandler have worked to great effect before in The Wedding Singer and 51st Dates. They are good pairing. 51st Dates is... if you compare it to other Sandler outputs, it is significantly better.
That's not how you should see this.
It's not. But I'll grant you this. It has one great moment in which Drew Barrymore beats the living hell from Rob Schneider with a baseball bat. That is comedy gold.
Also an unfulfilled ambition of mine so far. Like.
Oh, really? Yours too? That's too long. Ironically enough, very forgettable, other than a couple of scenes.
So the basic premise of this comedy is that Adam Sandler and Drew Barrymore go on a very bad date, And then afterwards, they each respectively go to Africa, where they end up being put on the same tour group.
So, sounds, if only you could see the looks on Jay and on my face right now.
I'm still out.
Who's directing?
It's Frank Corassi.
Oh, God, he directed Click. He directed half of the shit Sander has been in. Next.
Yep.
Yeah, well, move on. Let's move on.
So after that, in June, is their next one of their big, big budget releases, the Tom Cruise starring Doug Liman directed Edge of Tomorrow, sci-fi epic.
Now, you see, is that the very generic trailer from where we're looking at?
This is the one which basically looks like Source Code mixed with Groundhog Day.
It's a potentially interesting premise. Who doesn't like Tom Cruise in a blockbuster? It's also got Emily Blunt. That's a thumbs up from me. And I think Doug Liman.
I think he's got a bit something about him.
And Bourne Identity is still a solid little thriller.
I think it's a great thriller.
I almost want to forgive him for Jumper just because he did Bourne Identity and Swingers. But that trailer. And Go. Thank you. I almost forgot about Go.
And Mrs. Smith.
Yes.
Which I enjoyed.
It's enjoyable. But it's passable. But.
Mrs. Pitt.
Hey!
He's on fire.
But I must say, this trailer, anything I've seen of this film already, it looks terrifically generic.
I always feel like I've seen the movie.
So I don't care. 20
minutes of it was shown to UK journalists recently, and it's going to be shown to Irish journalists soon. And basically, what I've heard back from the British journalists is the 20 minutes look very impressive, but that they are the best moments of almost every sci-fi film that you can imagine.
I can also point out, why the hell does anybody want to see 20 minutes of a film? That's just a personal thing.
It's like we were saying earlier. This is it's just to sell things.
I don't want to see 20 minutes. I want to see a film, or I don't want to see 20 minutes. But that's just me.
Yeah, no, it is. It is usually what you see is the first 20 minutes or the first 10 minutes.
Sure, and then you've seen those Star Trek.
And then you go in. And you're waiting for that bit to be over so you can see what the rest of it is. So.
Yeah.
If you want to show me 20 minutes of a film, add on another 7 minutes and make it legit. Otherwise, I don't care.
What Philip said.
So, basic plot of Edge of Tomorrow, Tom Cruise is a soldier who has his day, so the day that he's recruited into the army, dies at the end of it, wakes up again. It is.
I preferred this when it was called Source Code. I'm sorry, but that plot is rehashed.
Is there a more generic title than The Edge of Tomorrow?
It was originally called All You Need Is Kill, which is the name of the book.
That sounds more interesting.
That does at least make it sound more interesting.
And maybe with an edge.
It's better than Oblivion, I'm in. But if it has a soundtrack to match Oblivion, then I'm also in, because that's an incredible soundtrack. So, after that comes the musical, the Clint Eastwood-directed Jersey Boys.
Clint Eastwood musical.
Yes, Clint Eastwood is directing a musical based on the...
That only ever inspires fear.
I will say, I know Clint Eastwood is considered one of the great auteurs of Hollywood, but I think he's made so many bad films.
Clint Eastwood?
Yes.
Lately, he's hit
he's
and miss.
A spectacular role of bad films.
They're not all bad. Gran Torino's watchable.
It's okay.
It's okay. Hereafter is unforgivable in my book.
And I actually really like Frankie Valli in the Four Seasons. I grew up listening to that kind of music when I was younger because I had older brothers, but so I might have a soft spot for it.
Yeah, so
we shall see.
There's mixed elements there. The question is, who's in it?
It's all people who have previously been in the stage show it's relatively unknown.
It's going to be one of those things where they're just trying to put the stage adaptation on screen. But why? I mean, we got that for with Rent, and they're always forgettable.
This is going to be the ninth picture in next year's Best Picture list.
Yeah,
you know, that film, that one that you
that nobody no, cared
nobody
for.
Cared. I was there. There it shouldn't be there. It won't mean anything. It'll just be there.
It'll be nine all over again.
So after that comes a new comedy with Melissa McCarthy called Tammy.
I'm guessing this isn't the story of how Debbie Reynolds got to sing that song.
No, it really isn't.
it really isn't.
What is it then?
McCarthy works in a fast food shop. Her boss won't let her leave, so she decides to rob the fast food shop.
Sure, who hasn't?
Who directs?
It's her husband, Ben Falcone.
Right. I still haven't heard any reason I should give a toss.
That's because her grandmother is being played by Susan Sarandon.
Okay. Hold on. Better. Mind you, she was a Mr. Woodcock. Okay, never mind. Next.
So was Billy Bob Thornton.
It was still rubbish.
I will agree with her. Next. Okay. I want to move on.
Next is the Wachowskis' next sci-fi epic. And I mean, it looks like a proper sci-fi epic. It looks like nothing that you've ever contemplated before. Jupiter Ascending.
Oh, their next sci-fi epic. I still haven't finished digesting the last one. I don't mean that in a good way.
Yeah. Well, this one looks like more sci-fi than anything that they've ever done before. This is...
From the guys who did The Matrix. Yeah. Are you kidding me?
This is quite something.
Sequels.
Nobody knows what in the name of God the film is about. There's something to do with some sort of Queen of the Universe type person played by Mila Kunis.
She's the Queen of many universes.
There's also Channing Tatum is in it.
I've seen a picture of Channing Tatum. Does he have like pointy ears?
He looks a bit odd now.
Okay, yeah, that's intrigued me a little bit.
They released the posters for it last week, and the one of Mila Kunis is her looking like she just stepped out of a farm in Kansas against the background from The Great Gatsby.
She looks a lot more interesting.
Yeah, that's a very bad Photoshop. The Channing Tatum one is quite cool. So.
We'll see.
Yeah. So coming up then in August is Into the Storm, which is a Twister-based movie that very much like Twister. It follows a group of people who are tornado hunters, but this one looks much more destructive than that.
Right. I would like to say I preferred this when it was Twister, but I hate Twister, like most people do.
Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Yeah, he's so what? Oh, yeah. He's wasted.
Like, my last
so
many truly drunken experience in the cinema was Twister. Like, drunken.
I think you had to be drunk to enjoy
it
that.
It really wasn't good.
That's Jan de Bont, the man who made a tornado roar.
Did he also make Speed 2?
He did.
On a cruise ship.
He did.
Yes. The most speedy of vessels.
But you know what? Neither of those are even his greatest cinematic crime. The remake of The Haunting. I spit on you, sir. Absolutely.
Okay, let's move on.
Stephen Quayle, the director of Final Destination 5, is
directing
this.
Hang on. Final Destination 5. Yeah, a lot of it is just another run-of-the-mill, how are these people going to die flicks. But at the same time, it has a bit more smarts than it lets on, and the 3D is actually used to fairly amazing
effect. I gave up after two movies. I never get to the fifth movie.
I think you can watch it with having missed the third and fourth. I think that's allowed.
I won't lose any kind of historical point.
The fourth is some of the most inventive deaths I've ever seen on screen. So I'm
Why should I care?
For that's the only main reason. But the main thing about Into the Storm is found footage film.
No.
Richard Armitage is in it, so this is his first almost it's going to be interesting to see what he does. Next on the list and coming out in October in the US, we haven't got an Irish release date for it yet, is The Judge. This is a Robert Downey Jr. Comedy where Robert Duvall is his dad.
Okay.
Yeah, so he,
I was really hoping it was Judge Judy by Epic, but alas, no.
So what happens is Robert Downey Jr. returns home to find out that his father, who is a judge, is the only suspect in a hit-and-run death of his mother.
Right. And this is a comedy, you say?
Yes. Well, dark comedy. Yeah. So
No kidding.
Robert Downey Jr. is a lawyer with fairly unscrupulous morals. So it's Robert Downey Jr. plus Robert Duvall. I mean, that's...
Well, Duvall will always get my attention. So.
Yeah, same here.
We shall see.
Indeed.
I'm on board for this.
There's a lot of we shall sees, I have to say, in this list so far. But,
There always are. So take them as they come.
Thanksgiving release from Warner's in the US is Horrible Bosses 2. We couldn't expect it around the same time. This is, of course, the sequel to Horrible Bosses, which saw Colin Farrell have perhaps the world's worst comb over. Although, it
did look impressive.
Yeah, it's Tom Cruise in Tropic Thunder esque.
Quite dreadful. The first film has its moments. It's fittingly entertaining, completely unmemorable, but still. You had Kevin Spacey doing his best impression of himself from Swimming with Sharks, so that's a plus.
And Kevin Spacey is back.
Woo!
Along with Jason Bateman, Jason Sudeikis, and Charlie Day as the main three.
Can we drop Sudeikis, please?
Really, he's your problem, not Charlie Day.
Charlie Day's great in it.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't have a lot of time for that man.
I prefer him to Jason Sudeikis any day.
But Jamie Foxx is also bad.
Okay, that's it. I'm in.
Okay, so and
not to up the rating on this podcast, but look up his character's name. If that doesn't at least make you smile.
So the last movie in the Warner's biggest release of the year, without a shadow of a doubt, is the final part in the Hobbit trilogy.
For now.
The Hobbit, There and Back Again.
Jay, do you want to check the hint of cynicism?
No. I'm sure it'll be wonderful for all you people that will see it.
So this one will feature the Battle of Five Armies, which is by far and away the biggest set piece in book. It will also feature the attack on Rivertown, so that's going to be quite something. The visuals will be incredible.
Well, they were certainly incredible in the last film. Just to lay my cards on the table, I hated An Unexpected Journey. I thought The Desolation of Smaug was a big improvement, while still being quite flawed, but just the arrival of Smaug, that really kicked it up a notch. So I hope, just on the basis of how much the films improved from the first to the second, if that jump continues in the third, well,
we're in fucking time.
Oh, yay!
If this proves to be the last Peter Jackson adaptation of the book of J.R.R. Tolkien,
we can hope.
It will be 16 years he will have spent making Tolkien films.
With a gap for The Lovely Bones and King Kong. That was a waste of time!
Two truly awful films.
Well, King Kong does. Again, it has its
faults. Many, many problems.
It does, but I can still watch it.
So, moving on to the box office top 10. This is this week's box office top 10 in Ireland. We have at 10, and surprisingly actually in the top 10, is the new release, Lionsgate's The Legend of Hercules, starring Kellan Lutz as Hercules.
Right, we openly mocked this last week. How the hell is this here? Was it that bad a week? Really?
22,000. It's a great din. I mean, it won't be there next week.
Opening weekend of 22,000 based on 39 locations. So they had €552 per location. That's
abominable.
Dreadful.
We won't be seeing it again then.
It's gotten 1-star reviews from a number of Irish publications and
many others besides.
It didn't press screen, so we haven't seen it because we refused to pay to see this.
Yes, that's fair.
So at 9. And down from last, I think number 3.
That's a
with
proper
an
jump.
Absolutely monumental drop of 72%. I mean, that is precipitous. It's Aaron Paul's Need for Speed.
That is how far must you go back to see such a huge drop for one film week on week?
Oh,
that, over a year and a half.
Or more. You have to go back 2 or 3 years to see.
We have a good idea why, in terms of what's released.
Yeah, well,
reminds me. I'm not letting this go. You said you would last week. Did you go see it?
No, I did not.
Well, on the basis of those figures, you better hurry up.
Yeah, you want them long. Let's
That's
dropping out.
If I miss it, so be it.
It'll be gone by Thursday. All right. From most screens. At number 8 is Startup. So it moved up from 10 to 8, despite taking a 41% drop. A lot of that drop I can attribute to the fact that it closed in the IFI after 1 week.
Ouch.
I missed it. It was gone. Is it still about where is it showing?
Is it here in the lighthouse?
It's here in the lighthouse.
I must get to see it because I'm near the corner. So
I'd like to make a potential point. But if anybody's listening from our good friends in the IFI, hello to you all. But your scheduling, there's a lot of films there you keep for just 1 week. And I think a lot of people are missing out on it. Now, the IFI is a fine venue.
We were there last night.
Yep.
Yeah. It's just, you need to try and keep some films there longer. If that's at the expense of some other films, fine, because some of those other films can be quite weak. Just maybe a little pickier on the schedule, that's all. Otherwise, keep up the good work.
What's absolutely telling is that one of the films that is not here, that in the charts was still there, and despite getting very weak reviews, is YSL, Yves Saint Laurent.
Yeah.
That's still in the IFI, but not.
It's not.
It's interesting. Startup. Yeah.
And it's not. And Yves Saint Laurent, I don't think, ever troubled the top 10.
No, didn't have a home.
I suppose that speaks to the IFI's just position as an art house cinema.
It does.
But Startup has got Need for Speed. I mean, it's,
true.
True.
But then again, Startup had a wider release. It got into Cineworld, it got into the Lighthouse. So, I suppose there are all kinds of considerations to be taken in, but hey, what do I know? I don't work in cinema programming. I wish.
Not
please.
Yet.
Not yet. Not yet. So, give me time.
At number 7, dropping just one place from number 6 and now 5 weeks in the chart, is the Liam Neeson starring action
the machine that is in
Nonstop.
Nonstop. Oh.
He is like the Terminator of
We've had to discuss this every week we recorded this podcast. It's still there. As long as we're doing this, I'm convinced Nonstop will not leave the Irish charts.
And I'm still the only person to have seen it around.
Yeah. I keep hoping it'll be gone by the following week, but it keeps hanging around.
It's still going to be. It's like, oh, it's like
here at Christmas.
It's like a bad dose of something. Just won't go away.
It is fluff, you know. So if you go watch it, it is fluff. So
there'll always be fluff.
Also still in the charts and now in its 7th week.
And also starring Liam Neeson.
And also starring Liam Neeson.
The man owns everything.
3.2 million at the Irish box office.
The Lego Movie.
The Lego Movie.
It's awesome. You know this. Awesome. We know this. So, yeah.
Go see if you haven't, although practically the whole country may well have seen
it's basically, it's gotten like 80 cents for every person in the country at this stage. So,
wow. Let's bring that to a
year. Astonishing. Really, when you think about it.
Well, I mean, it's well on target for 3.5 million, 4 possibly by the end of the
month. No, it won't. It hasn't. It's dropped to 39,000 this week. Even if it was to stay the course there, it'll.
You think?
3.5 would it take 10 weeks to get 3.5?
The strange thing is that
it'll probably get close. It'll probably get close to it because it'll stay in kids clubs and things like that. But
great work, though.
There's great work. There's that's competition coming. So
Some of it this week.
Some of it this week. Yeah. So at number 5 is the Irish comedy The Stag. So it dropped from 4 to 5. So it's still doing really well.
Nearly up to 500,000.
Yeah.
Which is pretty goddamn good.
It'll pass 500,000 probably tomorrow or Thursday. So,
fantastic.
Yeah.
Good man, jump up.
It's a remarkable achievement, and we wish more Irish comedies of that caliber were made. And we're glad to see that one of that caliber is being rewarded.
Yes, indeed.
Agreed. So at number 4, dropping from last week's number 1 in its 4th week of release, despite what Renfrew tell us, is the Grand Budapest Hotel, Wes Anderson's latest opus or love story to projection ratio.
Done very well.
Yes, it has.
Doing very well.
Yeah. It's doing very well in many a territory. It's expanding in the US now and just everywhere. Everybody's saying it's just this massive sleeper hit, and it's most likely going to become Wes Anderson's highest grossing to date.
Doesn't that make you happy?
It makes
me very happy.
It does. It reinstates my faith, fragile as it ever is, in cinema going audiences.
Agreed. That's exactly what it does.
More of that, please. Brav number.
So at number 3, and in its in a preview release weekend, is the sequel to 2011's Blue Sky Animation and Fox Animation prizing hit Rio. Rio 2 is...
This is the little blue bird.
This is about a little blue bird called Blue, voiced by Jesse Eisenberg.
Wait. He's not called Rio?
No, he's called Blue.
I'm confused.
Of course he is.
He goes to Rio. The film is set in Rio. It is the biggest opening for an anime film in Brazil ever.
Wow.
It's 17 million Brazilian box office. And it's set to do fairly well here. Its figures are up on the release of Rio 1. Rio 1 made about half of that money in its preview weekend.
Yeah. I haven't seen it, the first one, but I've heard polite things. It looks inoffensive enough, and as long as it's not complete dreck that's crawling up the charts, I'm fine with that.
I described it recently as Blue the Cockatoo is new at the zoo.
How long did it take you to come up with that one?
I thought of it almost instantly. It's because it comes to Big Bang Theory. It's a pun on something that happens in the Big Bang Theory. So, at number 2, and in its first official release weekend, it doubled its box office takings from last weekend.
Wow.
It's the Muppets Most Wanted.
It didn't suffer as much as I thought it might.
No,
it
didn't.
Or as much as I hoped.
Indeed. There it is. You can't argue with the figures, I guess.
Almost 205,000 this week to make almost 420,000
a good weekend for Disney, isn't it?
Basically, it doubled its takings from the previous two release weekends in this weekend.
Right.
So that's Disney at number 2. And Disney is also at number 1 with the release of Captain America: The Winter Soldier. So, The film did quite well. 5,346 euro per location, so 63 locations, making it almost 350,000 euro this weekend.
Well, that is good, except, although you do have to bear in mind that it's at a heck of a lot of locations and they've marketed the hell out of it.
It's because it opened on Wednesday, it has a 5-day total of 477,000, and that is almost, well, it's actually, it's over 800,000 less than Iron Man 3.
Iron Man 3 was a remarkable hit, though. Oh, how much at the Irish box office on opening weekend?
1.3 million.
Opening weekend?
Opening weekend,
that's
wow.
Incredible.
Yeah, well,
it was very
rare. 5-day opening weekend.
But yeah, but still, that's still average it out. That's still remarkable figures. So,
yeah, so the Captain America Winter Soldier has the lowest figures of any of the Phase 2 Marvel movies, so or any Marvel movie since Avengers Assemble.
Yeah, but there's only the third one, and those are still great figures, so I don't think anybody's going to lose any sleep over that.
Yeah, no, and Guardians of the Galaxy will probably perform weaker than this in its opening weekend. We're hoping that word of mouth will be the thing that works in its favour, although the curiosity factor might work in its favour also.
Must be a saturated marketing as well, so
yeah.
Opening, so.
Absolutely.
Is this week's Irish box office top 10. Okay. So, opening next week is Noah.
Ah.
So, that's it. That's the big release. Noah's the big release. Also, we have the release of Divergent.
Ah, as well. The big US box office hit. The surprise US box office hit, would it be fair to say?
Yes.
It's done better than anybody expected.
It would be fair to say that it has done, well, it's done better than most YA adaptations, but with the exception of The Hunger Games, yes. Twilight, and Harry Potter.
As these things go, it's doing well. It's not really surprising. I mean, the original Hunger Games was released around the same time of year, and it's a good time of year for something like this because there's a vacuum there in the market. It's March, it's the dumping ground, the post-Oscars dumping
April
ground.
Now, yeah.
March, April, indeed. So, yeah, it's got a gap in the market, it went for it, and it owned. So, well done to the marketers. I haven't seen it, I've not heard great things, but it sells.
It's up on the site, Brian did a review on the site, it's got 3 stars. So it's not bad. He says that it's weak. So
yeah, that's kind of what I've been hearing.
Yeah. And we've at least another 2 movies, if not 3.
Those 3. Shailene Woodley has gotten recently is 3 more movies. So Allegiant and Insurgent.
Insurgent is a word. Is Allegiant? Someone, quick, pass me my division.
Yeah. So somebody who either.
Well, whatever the policy, but I am always glad to see more Shailene Woodley on screen because she's a wonderful actress, and look forward to seeing her in more of her in the future.
Yeah.
Although hopefully not in Spider-Man 3.
So the box office number 1 next weekend will be a fairly tightly contested one between Divergent and Noah and Captain America as a second week. I'm predicting Noah will probably go one.
I'm predicting Captain America.
I think
yeah.
Captain America could hold because it is getting strong reviews. The word of mouth, I think, it's a relatively fun time. I didn't like it as much as you, Niall. But,
no.
It is going to be tight, and I look forward to seeing what the figures show. Of the 3, I'm most looking forward to seeing Noah. I haven't yet.
No, I want to see it. I might see it this weekend.
And the reviews have been
pretty good.
I'm fascinated by all these critics who, they're just fascinated by how mad the whole thing seems to be.
And Oscar always brings something a little unusual to whatever he's doing.
And no director, Aronofsky or anyone else, is ever going to do a straight Bible adaptation.
No.
So, it diverges quite a bit from the source material. Of course, the classic Judeo-Christian story of Noah and his ark and his menagerie.
The whale.
Not Noah and the whale.
That's Jonah and the whale. So he'd never fit a whale on that ark.
God is not represented in the film, only that the creator, they reference him as the creator and the...
It's fine. I mean, he's referred to as the creator in the Bible at some point.
Only Russell Crowe can hear him inside his head, but he's not voiced.
But I like that, because it does add to the idea that all these his family and the people around him would doubt him.
Oh, yeah.
Why not?
He's a bit of a mentor. Yeah.
Also, Charlton Heston is dead, so, I mean... you couldn't have the voice of God.
Morgan Freeman did have a wonderful voice of God. So,
do you know my favourite take on the voice of God? The Prince of Egypt. Because when Val Kilmer's Moses sees him, he's voiced by Val Kilmer. Or, makes sense to me.
Or, yeah, well, that, yeah, that's quite sick. That'd be like Malkovich going inside his own head to see it.
Malkovich.
Which is on soon in the IFI.
I'd probably be there.
Also on Great Voices of God, not actually God, but playing the voice of God, Alan Rickman in Dogma.
Ah, yes. I preferred him as the voice of Marvin the Paranoid Android, but there you go.
He's just got a great voice.
Yes,
I've been working on that one for in the size of Alan's room under their makeup.
Also out this week, and Philip has already seen this, and myself and Jason went to see it last night, is Richard Ioannis, The Double.
Now, here's an interesting thing. It's rarely you find all three of us agreeing on a film. We all don't like this one. In fact, some of us hate it. Isn't that right, Jay?
I thought it was pretty appalling. I'd probably a touch harsh on it, maybe. But such is the miss of it. It just misses what it's trying to do, I think. And
you really need to aim big if you're going to adapt Dostoevsky.
And the tone doesn't right. It was too... Is it a comedy? Is it a drama? Can you get away with both?
The film doesn't know itself.
It's not funny enough to be a comedy, not dramatic. There's not enough heft to be dramatic. Or not enough madness in it for a Dostoevsky story.
Yeah, the basic story is the same as Dostoevsky's, in that Jesse Eisenberg's monotonous kind of drone character, he's weighed down to this futuristic dystopia, and he's just working day-to-day job. And one day he comes across this other person who looks, sounds just like him, but is a more outgoing and confident version.
Yep.
And he has to try and deal with this new existential crisis. Sounds interesting in paper, and of course it's a classic novel, but so what? It's visually, it's just a big Terry Gilliam ripoff.
It is very, very...
We
call it the second best Terry Gilliam film this year. It is...
admittedly, I prefer The Double to The Zero Theorem.
Zero Theorem is much more fun.
Yes, I agree.
It's certainly more fun, because The Double, not fun.
Darkly comic is how it's been described. And
it's dark. I question the comic.
It's dark in both senses of the word. It is a very dimly lit...
Deliberately trying to get some evoking, some sort of...
It's neo, some kind of noir.
But it doesn't have that heft. It doesn't have that feel to it. There's no dramatic weight.
It's one of these films that mistakes mood for music or music for mood. It is not... It's bad. If you want to watch the perfect example of this, and it's coming out later this year, The Enemy is with Denis Villeneuve.
With Jake Gyllenhaal.
And Jake Gyllenhaal. Denis Villeneuve, the director of Prisoners, is directing the film he made before Prisoners, but it's out later this year. It is very, very good. It has the same basic premise, but it holds together better.
Mm.
Jesse Eisenberg is great, though. Terrific.
Oh, no, Jesse Eisenberg is fantastic.
The best part of the film, and basically holds the whole mess together to some degree.
Yeah, I will say this for The Double. It is conclusive proof for anybody who wants to defend Jesse Eisenberg against any accusation that he plays the same character in every film.
Which I disagree. I think he's actually a very good actor.
I think he is, given the right material.
Yes.
And it shows that his Lex Luthor could be something very, very interesting.
It could well indeed, actually, yeah.
Does this mean you're actually getting your hopes up for that
film?
It's
a dreadful film.
Which we haven't seen yet, let's be fair.
We know it's going to be dreadful.
I am absolutely massive Superman fan, to the extent that, as you've seen in my house, I have Superman coasters. I have almost all the graphic novels. I am massive Superman fan, so I always hold out hope.
Imagine your dismay when Zack Snyder gets hold of the material.
So, Rio 2's official release is next weekend. Brian has seen it, but he hasn't written up the review yet, so I'm waiting on that.
Could be fun.
Yeah, it looks like it'll be fun. It'll be good for the kids. And then the IFI has got A Story of Children and Film out, and it's also got Tom Farrell.
I haven't seen A Story of Children and Film, but it's Mark Cousins, and his story of film, whether you read the book or watch the How Long 9 hour documentary.
Yes,
they're both remarkable
achievements. It's a seminal work.
Yeah,
the book is great. The show is better because you can visualize, you can see
the film.
It's glorious. It's an absolute glorious thing.
Yeah, and I would hope for more of the same from A Story of Children and Film. As for Tom and the Farm, which I have seen, This is Xavier Dolan, the French-Canadian wunderkind.
Yeah.
This is his latest film about a young gay man who goes to the funeral of his lover, although when he gets there, he realizes that the lover's family didn't actually know he was gay. And he's, well, as he spends more time there, more issues and revelations come to light, but not in any kind of soapy dramatic. So yeah, any kind of soapy dramatics. It's more. It's a mood piece, a remarkable mood piece. Dolan is. Some people find his films precocious, but this is extremely confident filmmaking.
He's like 17 years old, and he's made 20 films or something.
This is his fourth or fifth feature. He is only 24. It's
disgusting. It really is.
It really does make me feel old, but.
Yeah.
One
of his films, actually, I need to dip in.
Yeah, if any fans of his work will love this, and I would say if you're in the mood for a particularly off-kilter mood piece, one of my recordings comes on once in a while to just amaze, and
I
this is the one for
mood piece, so,
I'd say give this a go.
I think it would for me, I agree.
It's strange, it's weird, but it's most definitely a Dolan film, and take that as you will.
Count me in, Phil. Good stuff. Count me in.
Okay, so we're going to go to this week's guest list. I'm going to do myself. Yes. I'm going for the top 10 grossing directorial debuts of all time.
I've been looking forward to this one.
First film had to be a big hit. So, in reverse.
Define a big hit. Well,
yeah, massive box office hit. You know, so we're talking close to 100 million at the US box office.
That's the 10 biggest. Okay.
So, at number 10 is Michael Lembeck. Anyone tell me what the film was?
Oh, I feel like I should know this. Tell me.
Tim Allen.
Oh no. Oh no.
Oh no! Jesus hit the church!
Tim Allen plays Father Christmas in the sequel.
Not the second one?
Yeah, it's the Santa Claus 2.
I was afraid it was going to be the third one. But no, actually, I am going to say this here now. Okay, the original Santa Claus, I saw that came out when I was a kid, and God help me, it is actually a cute little twist on the idea of Santa Claus. And Santa Claus 2 just builds on it. It's not as good. But, again, heaven help me, it proves surprisingly watchable if you catch it on TV at Christmas. That said, Santa Claus 3 is abhorrent.
But Santa Claus 3 has Jack Frost, which is, you know, he's just...
Jack Frost played by Martin Short!
It could have been good, but it really wasn't. No, but Santa Claus 2 is a bit fun, and it is a perfectly fine Christmas movie. But it made $139 million.
Wow.
So
Tim Allen still sells. However many years after Home Improvement, he still sells.
The Tool Man Taylor. So at 9,
who's the director then?
Daniel Myrick and Eduardo Sanchez.
Blair Witch Project. A deserving
fine,
hit.
Fine film.
Yeah, one of the best uses of viral marketing the world has ever seen.
Yes.
Yeah, it's paved the way for so many films in this marketing.
Broadband, wasn't it, in the sense that you couldn't really find out quickly.
No.
That's probably added to the mystique of the advertising.
It was the first film to correctly use the internet for advertising.
But the film itself is terrific.
Yeah.
It's not a gimmick, and it's not...
It is a gimmick, but before it became a gimmick.
Yeah.
Footage. It's very, very well made for what it is.
Very low
budget. It's for so cheap.
The last shot is
amazing.
It's terrifying. It builds up its story and its mythos so well to make that last shot so intense.
I want to rewatch. I'm going to rewatch that tonight.
You know what? I know a lot of people who really don't like that film. I don't care what they say. It's terrifying.
I saw it in the cinema.
It spent years on my wall. The poster of it spent years on my wall.
It's terrifying. Good. It's brilliant. And I'm glad to see it's in there.
Same here.
Okay, at number 8, Phyllida Lloyd is the director.
Mamma Mia.
Yes.
Here we go again.
I haven't seen it. I'll never see it.
I haven't seen it either, but I would hope to God it was better than her following film, The Iron Lady.
It's different than The Iron Lady. I don't know if I would describe it as being better. It's
politically, I couldn't watch The Iron Lady.
It's perfectly watchable. It's got Pierce Brosnan in it. I would watch anything that has Pierce Brosnan in it.
Pierce Brosnan's great.
And he's not in the Expendables. So
you're still on a high from Taffin, aren't you?
Maybe you shouldn't be living here. Yeah.
Maybe I shouldn't.
What's next? Mama Mia's, yes, fine. Amanda Seyfried, don't have a lot of time for her, but she's okay.
Can she sing, I guess, is the thing.
Nobody can sing in it. They're all... No,
you make this sound so enticing, though.
Yeah, no, they're not. It's not for me. It wasn't a film that was made for me. I'm not. No, I have seen it.
Nor I. Oh, well.
So, at number 7, and Philip has already talked about, John Pasquin, 1994, original Tim Allen.
No. Really?
Yep.
Oh,
careers are made of this.
This Santa Claus at number 7, yeah.
See, I don't know how to react to that, really. Yay?
This is the only list you'd get those two movies in, possibly ever.
Unless you're talking about top ten Tim Allen Christmas movies.
You know what? That was on TV over Christmas, obviously. And I saw it, and okay, you have Tim Allen there. You also have Peter Boyle, Judge Reinhold.
David Cromholtz as an elf.
David Cromholtz as an elf! You couldn't get that made today. You couldn't.
No.
Peter Boyle's dead anyway. So
no, but if you take an appropriately, an appropriately gruff replacement, but still. Oh,
Judge Reinhold is hilarious.
I like Judge Reinhold.
The worst part is, I think a lot of people's enduring memory of Judge Reinhold will be that reference in The Simpsons. We're all aware of Grandpa's problems, but next to Mr. Burns, he's Judge freaking Reinhold. I don't know who that is.
It's about Judge Reinhold.
Yeah. Oh, bless Judge Reinhold.
And at number 6, and this is by far and away the weakest film in this top 10.
The weaker than Mamma Mia.
Yeah, it is. Dear. Michael Patrick King's...
Oh no.
Sex and the City.
Sex and the City movie, yes.
Hang on, I haven't seen it, but I've heard that Sex and the City is passable compared to Sex and the City 2.
Apparently an abomination.
Yeah, still.
The poster for Sex and the City 2 was an abomination alone, so that with a high heel puncturing a football because it came out at the same time as the World Cup.
Clever, but, I'll put it this way. Last I checked, I have a penis, so I don't think this is made for us.
No. The commode rant of that film.
I know.
The second film is
terrific. It's one of the
joys.
Yeah, it is.
It's wonderful. Great. It's a real, real joy.
Yeah.
Okay, also a film that was aimed more at the female market than at the male market, number 5, Rob Marshall.
Chicago. I like Chicago a lot. I said it. I do.
The Academy Award winning Chicago.
Yeah, it's very fashionable now to hate on Chicago. But at the time,
I hate that at the time, though.
I'm very enjoyable.
No, I enjoyed it. I have no issue with Chicago. I think it was perfectly fine.
Having looked back on it now, I mean, there are issues with it. It's very stagey as these things go. I mean, you could tell Marshall comes from a stage background. But I have to give the cast kudos for just embracing it. Richard Gere is having a whale of a time.
Yeah, no. And Marshall's next one looks like it's going to be very interesting. Disney's Into the Woods.
Right.
Another musical.
I think he kind of needs to stop with the adaptations. He did 9. He did Memoirs of a Geisha.
He did the 4 Pirates of the Caribbean.
And he did the 4 Old Gear.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think there's a man in need of a niche. And I just don't think...
Musicals are his niche.
That doesn't mean he does them well. I think he needs to find something he's really good at. If it means returning to stage, well, so be it.
So at 4, and this was basically a showreel that they managed to turn into a film. 2010, Joseph Kosinski.
Tron Legacy,
yes.
Well, the figures don't lie, it was a big hit, but it's all visuals and very shaky plot.
Yeah, and...
Young Jeff Bridges, yeah, young old Jeff Bridges.
It was a sequel to a not very good film in the first place, in fairness. It's just a nostalgic film.
Very much built on
an original technical Marvel film.
Yeah, but nothing else, though. It's
no.
The notion of travelling inside a computer is quite something, and did give rise to a hilarious episode of South Park. where they mixed Tron with Facebook. And Farmville and all the rest. It is very, very funny. But
and also the sight of an albino Michael Sheen, who is white from the tips of his hair all the way down to his high heels. It's weird.
But yeah, I like the visuals of it. The motorbike was the light cycle was very, very cool. It had great posters and a great marketing, but the film was weak.
And
that soundtrack was amazing. Act 3 from 1986. So yeah,
director
is Peter Famin.
Oh, I feel like I should know this.
You call that knife?
I'm not. I think people forget just how much people wanted to love Crocodiles. Didn't Paul Hogan get an Academy Award nomination
for that? Sounds right.
He did, yeah.
Oh, dear God.
I enjoyed it.
This was the start of the Australian
invasion. I like a fish out of water story, so that was fine. I like it.
Yeah, so basically what you're saying is we can hold this film almost single-handedly responsible for the brief rise of Yahoo Serious. Okay, I'll take it.
Yeah, pretty much. It was how Aussie cinema started and, well, really came to fore in the US. And,
in the late 80s.
Incredible money, made $174 million. So.
I'm just going to take this opportunity, since you mentioned Aussie film. This weekend I picked up a DVD copy and rewatched Wake and Fright. The finest film ever to come out of Australia.
It's fantastic. It's absolutely fantastic.
Well, I'll see your Wake and Fright and I'll raise you the proposition.
No.
The proposition's fine, but it's nowhere near as...
It's nowhere near as in...
Primeval.
Primeval is the word.
Wake and Fright is.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed the proposition. Really enjoyed
it. Oh, me too. It is stylish.
It hasn't got the...
I'm BMX Bandits.
Yes.
BMX Bandits.
Case
bless you.
Closed.
Wins for introducing the world to Nicole Kidman.
Good enough for me.
At number two, it is the directorial debut of, at the time, the world's biggest actor, Kevin Costner, 1990.
Dance with Wolves.
Yes.
Was it that? How much?
$184 million.
Jeez.
For a three-hour film as well.
Can I just say this?
Academy Award-winning.
That's the problem people have with it. It'd be Goodfellas. Which is a far superior film.
It is, but take that out of the equation. Chances with Wolves is great. It's wonderful.
Listen, the Oscars beat my favourite of all time, Raging Bull, Ordinary People being his best picture. And I still really like Ordinary People.
Yeah, same here.
It's very sad. It makes me sad. It makes me.
But despite, ignore the Oscars, we always do.
The Oscars is
not. Because Dance with Wolves, yeah,
it's a fine picture.
It is a fine picture. Costner, whatever people think about him as an actor, but he has real directorial.
I'm a fan of Costner as an actor. I think he's great, and he's a fine director.
I think he's a fine actor with the right material. Sometimes he can be incredibly good.
Two words for you.
He's actually really, really good in Tin Cup.
Tin Cup still has.
It's one of my.
Is it Tin Cup?
Watch.
Is it Tin Cup?
Yes.
Is it Tin Cup or Bull Durham that has him say that line? Yeah, you couldn't hit water if you fell out of a friggin' boat.
I think that's a Bull Durham.
Damn. Still, I love both.
Also, fine.
Yeah.
Sports movie.
And at one, the highest grossing directorial debut of all time.
Oh, God.
In the US,
I tremble to think.
Is from 1978, so we're going back a long, long way. Randall Kessler.
Ah, Grease is the word.
Which is brilliant.
It's so much fun.
It is
wonderful.
Songs are great. And the 50-year-olds playing teenagers is great. Everything about it is great.
I have no doubt that many a teen boy's sexuality was informed by Olivia Newton-John in that outfit.
Tell me about it, stud.
I thought you were talking about the cardigan on the swings.
That's a different
issue. That's a different
issue. That's when you're in your 30s, that's what that's
yeah, that's
Grease is great.
Grease is great.
I saw it in the cinema when he released it a few years back. It's great fun to see.
You just want to go along and sing along with it.
Just for the absolute insaneness of the end of it as well.
It just goes completely OTT,
and it doesn't care.
The car flies up.
It really doesn't care. It's a joy.
It is a joy. It is.
So that's the top 10, and
the fine list, I'd say.
We'll conclude the week there also. So,
what a lovely thought to end on. John Travolta flying off.
We'll always be together.
Will we, Jay?
Will we? Indeed.
Well, we will be next week when we come back for the next Scanon podcast. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
Thank you.